You're listening to the Modern Producer Podcast, expert talk on livestock housing and animal husbandry. Get ready for today's episode.
Well, hey, everybody. Glad you're joining us again. I'm going to say good morning and good afternoon today for a special reason. We have actually a little bit of a fun kind of different kind of podcast today because we have someone joining us from Denmark, which should be a lot of fun. So I'm going to introduce you quickly to Michael Kirk. That's his name. I'm going to let him do the rest of it for us and let you meet him. We have today with us also Kevin is on, of course, from Canada. Ben sitting here to tell us if should we say anything wrong. He'll be the guy just like, hey, back up. Jake will be laughing in the background every time we have a joke that's appropriate or otherwise. So without too much further ado, Michael, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody who's listening?
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this. Had a bit of pre-study on it. Listened to a couple of your famous podcasts, even in the part of Europe I'm in. I try at least to make you famous, telling everyone to listen to this. So, no, it's good. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm located in Denmark. Founded a company for many years ago, I think 2009, January, just in the beginning of the financial crisis. I think a smaller version of a new standard, but how everything is smaller in the beginning. So, we grew over the years, was also a NetApp dealer as well as New Standard. So, and this is also where I met you guys over the years via NetApp. So, and we have done some nice projects over the years in Denmark, Scandinavia. We have the most crazy projects we have done. We have done in Asia and in some very interesting projects in UK actually as well for some university farms, but production farms in all sizes from 150,000 in Denmark, Norway, very small farms to 8,000 sows in China. And right now we are starting here in December delivering a project in Asia as well on 16,000 sows. So we are moving on, but also we have developed as a company over the years from being a trading company for the last years where we have developed our own IoT platform and as well as developed a complete program of feeding systems, everything from simple chain systems to the more tech versions of air systems where we are blowing feed individual all over the farms, also providing straw and bedding material. So everything controlled on our own control platform, Conscious. So we have done some crazy steps the last years from being a classic train company. But basically we are still having the same mindset, trying to do some good projects with some good farmers.
Sure.
And now, Michael, you correct me if I'm wrong, but you mainly, like your history itself, mainly focused on, like, you can simplify it as feed conveying, but really that's been more your focus, right? The protein actually feeding side of it, not necessarily in ventilation or anything, or do you get into that side of it as well?
No, that's true. That's true. Our focus is, automation, but not ventilation. So this is, we 100% focused on feeding and a lot of other companies in the market are also trying to make this complete package having what is it, pen equipment, and so on. We try to get around that and just work together with different pen equipment companies. If we don't have it, we are not competing. So we have some good partners in the market. But basically, we are doing a lot of layouts, which normally is, compared to being done by pen equipment companies. But since we also doing technology that is influenced by a good layout, we actually also are focusing quite a lot on that. And now entering other markets, we actually found what we thought was just normal common knowledge. We found that this wasn't. So we just entered Spain with our own branch office there and have our first employee started this year and done some projects with actually the second largest integrator there as well, but working with other companies there, we found that what we thought was common knowledge about a good layout, we could still come with some good value. So
You find that I think it's the same thing we find here, is that you'd think that everything that you know is just almost to you feels like common sense. This is what makes a good layout. This is why it works. And it becomes second nature, and it surprises you, doesn't it? When you approach a market and you're like, oh, you mean not everybody just knows this? Of course, it allows us to add value to a customer in what we offer with that knowledge, but it does sometimes come across as a surprise that, oh, you mean not everybody just gets it, why sows respond, why pigs respond in a certain way to certain inputs in terms of layouts or how you approach them or what you give them to work with. That's always been a bit of a big surprise to me, is that it doesn't just come naturally for everybody that this makes sense in a certain way.
No, that's true. And I'm not a son of a farmer, but I have been working with this business for more than 25 years now. So, and starting up this company in the beginning, there were no one but myself. So I have been but I've been a lot in farms and learn from that, and not only, just installing equipment and disappearing. We try to have a close relationship to our customers. So also learning from after the pigs entered. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And I think this also is a part of our success that we are not just in and out and then we hang in there and look into a long relationship. Customers.
Do you find that that's a unique approach in your in the European and Chinese markets that you work in, or is there does that set you apart, or is there other companies that try and do that? Because, and the reason I ask, that's I think the reason we get along so well and we've approached each other in the same way is because we approach the market in the same way. We try to develop a long-term relationship where we not only provide the best we can up front in terms of design and equipment, but then we go in behind all that and support it and learn from it. Not everybody, you're right. Some people just drop and run with equipment. Is that what you find more commonly?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. And I don't know if it's special. Yeah, it is also because we are up against some of the heavy suppliers on the market, and which have been there for many years, and they kind of, I also think, take everything as they are just meant to be there. So we are fighting. We have been fighting from the beginning to create.
Tim saying we're kind of similar in that way. They're good because you started, like you said, 2009, maybe a few years after us, kind of thing. But it's it's no different. It was our blood, sweat, and tears going into it. It wasn't anybody else's. And you have to fight the established companies, the big guys who, as you say, almost have that sense of entitlement that, well, they've always been selling the stuff. They'll continue doing it. And you're picking away at your one little thing. You go, but by the way, I know how to feed animals better than, you know, so you're not even offering the full thing. You're not offering a direct alternative. You're saying, hey, I can be specialized in something. And obviously, yes, it's been successful for you, but that's not that dissimilar from what we've done. That, yeah, you grab a few things and you say, look, we're really good at this. Now you have to pay attention to those things, right? So it's interesting that you find that. And even in which I guess from a North American perspective, we just kind of, you know, lump all of Europe together and going, okay, they're all further developed in the pig industry than we are, right? That's just a general assumption or thought process where I find it interesting. You're saying, yeah, you can even travel country to country and find differences yet and places where it's been same old for how many years and there's lots of room for improvement. So that's interesting from our side that we always assume Europe's farther ahead in general, right?
I can tell you we are not that similar. There's huge differences, but looking in from outside, perhaps it is.
But I'm assuming you probably just in Europe, the common perception probably is that the states are all just one as well. But quite honestly, we have regions and regions that do their own thing, whether it's in Canada or the U.S. You can go Western Canada versus Eastern Canada. You can go North Carolina versus Iowa, and there's significant differences in how things are done.
No, I think that's very, very, very similar. But you're also right. We have a tendency of looking like, U.S. is one big similar group. It's not. I understand that.
So. And you did that project in switching gears here a little bit. You did that project, and the last time we had even seen each other in person a few years back at Eurotier, you were working on some fairly large project in China, were you not?
Yeah.
Was that like a loose housing sow barn that you were working on, or what was the full scope of that?
We did a design together with a farm out there, which actually ended up, I think, setting not the standard, but at least is showing that this was a possible way. They are still being done huge loads of boxes or crates, whatever you call it. But we have done what we have done and been involved with in China specifically has only been loose sows or group housing.
That's Scandinavian project. That was that 8,000 you had referenced at the beginning. That was that was a farrow to finish. That was a fairly large project, was it not?
Yeah, it was very nice. At least, 31 4-foot containers. That's kind of a lot.
You almost. I almost had to laugh a bit because you almost said you set a new standard for China, but
actually I was very close to saying it, but I think I don't want to give them that.
In China, do you find what is the desire from the end user? Are you finding more it's a corporate level where they just want someone to build a good barn and they'll take it from there, or is there quite a bit of engagement after the sale there as well?
I would say China has changed a lot and it's going so rapidly, and from good-sized farmer, and how they are going to mega farms and controlled, or at least there is couple of handfuls that is just having the majority there. So crazy huge farms and also government supported projects and private owned companies. Companies coming from outside into China have a hard time there. And I think also I see a tendency that, they really say they want technology. And if you go to a fair, there's a lot of nice screens. But basically, when it comes to doing the project, how low can you go on price? It has going so fast. Not a lot of focus on quality equipment, not at all, in my opinion. Hmm. So we have a dealer and a partner there, but what they have sold is mainly standard simple systems, classic boxes, and just feeding systems, supplying the feed. One feed fits all. And then there have been a lot of focus on biosecurity, obviously because of the ASF, African swine fever, and this has been a big focus area. So we have not been, the last years, we actually haven't been that active ourselves directly in China, but more in other countries in Asia. We are, as I mentioned earlier, we are doing some crazy big projects there now. And in Philippines, Taiwan, we started a new dealer up in Korea as well. So this is, I think they have a higher focus on what the technology can bring them. And this opens the door more for us, I would say.
Which of those countries, you reference Korea, Philippines, I'm sure there are Taiwan, China, but which one would you say is most prone to just going high tech, everything and using it well? Like where is the attitude such that that let's put in the best?
Airplane,
and
you're going to make Michael choose a favorite.
I know. I'm putting him on the spot. And if you feel like that's a question you're not going to or not willing or wanting to answer, that's fine. We'll just trim this out.
I think we should put them under the same group, like Europe and US and Asia. So there's a tendency that there's some regions or some countries there in Asia have a higher focus and also seeing the value in it. But it's also, it's not just the country. It's also, I don't want to generalize more than I can. Of course, it's also connected to the customers that we are in contact with. Perhaps we are not in contact in China with the ones who are focusing so much on seeing the value in technology, but we hit some good contacts in some of the other places where they are more open to it and seeing the value of it.
Right.
One of the projects we have now where we are actually handling the feed from outside and into the farm, dividing picking up the feed on the big silos outside the fence and then transporting it in some 100 millimeter systems into the farm and supplying it to the different silos, the different feed types all over the farm, everything registered with load cells. We have power consumption measuring in our controllers combined with the load cells, supplying to the systems in the houses with multi-phase feeding and so on.
What I've seen from the outside, I would guess, and you can validate or tell me I'm off base here, but I think you've alluded to it, to be honest, is a lot of the focus in applying technology is kind of heading or focused on biosecurity and how you can improve biosecurity with feed delivery and interaction with outside feed trucks or people in general, anything coming into a farm. So I would guess just, and that's somewhat we've seen from the outside, some of the social media you guys do through Agrisys or different companies that I've seen, the focus tends to be on separating the outside interaction and using technology for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
And I even seeing big investments for feed mills being closed because they have been located in the middle of the farm layout. So they simply don't dare bring in the minerals or components for making the feed into the farm because they can be infected or definitely will be infected with ASF to some level. So that before it's heat treated or whatever they do or zone treated, they don't want it on the site.
Speaking of ASF, what is your take right now? What are you hearing? How well is it controlled in Asia right now? Is it still a wildfire in certain regions, or do they have it sort of tamped down and it's on its back foot? Or where, what are you hearing from that area?
I hear that it's not contempt. It's still going around there, and it's a huge risk.
So they have to be super careful then.
Exactly. Just going to a city, bigger city, to a restaurant, you can detect it coming from checking out your shoes afterwards. Right. They're still getting, or people coming in have been to the wet markets or whatever. So it's still a big risk. It really is.
That would explain the focus then on the biosecurity.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. So for Denmark's part, you know, we are a small country, so we put up a fence at the border to prevent for the wild boars coming from the south. You know, we have Poland and as a neighbor to Germany, and it's a risk all over Europe. So it has high focus here as well.
Has your fence succeeded in preventing that transfer, or where do you guys actually stand with ASF?
Yeah, we are, to my knowledge, absolutely free. So this is fantastic and has a high focus. Trucks, there's a lot of transports over the border with pigs from Denmark to Germany and of livestock. And this is the trucks coming back. They have made special washing halls and machines. So everything has to be heated and washed in these before entering Denmark again. But it's still a risk. Just your Eastern European going to do a good job in Denmark or in Central Europe can, you know, they bring food from home. There you have the risk. A truck driver coming from areas with ASF, standing, making his dinner at the end of the truck and throwing out garbage, something then you're done there as well. So
that's all it takes.
I don't
know if you've ever read that, Tim, and I don't remember all the details, but the foot and mouth disease that actually made it to Canada back in the 50s, I think it was. And it shows how simple these things can move. It actually was a Polish immigrant coming and working his way across Canada, and his last stop on a farm, by the time he got into Saskatchewan, a piece of sausage he had brought with him from Poland was a little past his liking, so he threw it into the pig pen, and foot and mouth disease broke out in Saskatchewan. Right. So it's the simplest, stupidest thing that can move these diseases around the world. As Michael said, like it's just such attention to detail and realizing what it can take to move this stuff is yeah, I can imagine the biosecurity and the hassles, even if you're traveling around to different countries, as you say, to do business, it's an awareness at all times of where you're at and what you might be exposed to.
Sure. Well, let's get off of the depressing stuff. We can't control everything. It's, you know, we got to
control those.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's move it forward. I got the coffee starting to kick in or I'm just getting, I'm like, oh, we can't stop it anyway. Of course we can try. We'll do our part. But, so what's new and exciting then in your part of the world or in your company? Would give us something fun to talk about, Michael.
Oh, now we're talking. Yeah, no, we, I think, if I should mention something, I of course cannot help it, but I want to talk about ourselves.
Well, that's, so, we brought you on here with that kind of thought.
Your opportunity. Go ahead. Yeah.
plug away. We're all for it. We obviously know that some of what you've been developing, we've been looking at it. Just to go on the 30,000 foot level initially, it seems like a lot of what you're doing is maybe a little bit forefront in our industry anyway, and you're hitting the IoT probably a little bit harder than some companies, the larger manufacturers are. You're developing your own equipment now that is trying to become really an integral part of the Internet of Things. So bring us up to speed. Then you're focusing a little bit on the feed more than anything, feed delivery and weight and feed, I guess, if we really look at it. So what's your overarching goals? Where are you, how are you approaching the market and how you would develop things?
Yeah. That was a lot of questions.
Yep. Well, now I can sit back and drink coffee and let you talk.
Yeah. No, but our take on it was more or less that you know, we got kind of frustrated some years back about how some of the big players were not, you know, using the potential they had and listening to what we felt came from the market and the wish from the customers. So we took this frustration more or less to making some technology simple. That's actually our goal, because we saw a tendency of people wanting to make things complex, and we don't think it needs to be so complex. So we like to make it simple and using that technology. And you said perhaps we are a bit in front of using this Internet of Things and so on, integrating that, but basically we are using that to make it simple. What I experienced and what was the trigger and the kickoff was basically that when we supplied some of the complex systems to the younger generation of farmers, then I saw their disappointment. I never sold at that time systems showing the controller, because if I did that, I probably wouldn't have sold the system, but they liked the benefits from the system. But having a complex embedded Windows computer system that was developed 20, 25 years ago was actually disappointing, because they were used to, where's the app? Where, how can I follow it from home and so on? And it looks more like an user interface for a programmer than it was for a farmer. and this is one of our drivers to make this simple. So we're really trying to do that. One of the things I learned from my good friend doing this project in China for 8,000 hours.
And I'm not sure if we froze again or not. We lost. We give us a second. Let's see if we can get Michael back.
The value it could create.
Michael, I'm gonna stop you for a sec. We froze on this end. Not sure which connection it was, but it was the when you were talking about 8,000 cells, right? That's when it froze up.
Yeah, we try again.
We can always. Hey, if it is what it is, we'll just let it flow. But go ahead.
Yeah, good. So no, as I said, one of the trigger things for us was also how to help farmers implement their knowledge into the stables. And what I learned from my good friend with the 8,000 sows in China project, he embraced the technology and saw that if he should roll out his knowledge to the farthest corner of the stables to a low-skilled worker, how could he do that? That he could do that using technology. Mm-hmm. And this is why we were able to sell 2,040 of the NADAP compact feeders for the farrowing stables. That was easier for them for him to secure that the sows were fed in a good way, instead of training a low-skilled worker to enter in and out of the pens and all the obvious other good arguments for that. But this was also for the feeding systems. When you have a huge farm layout, how do you know that the machines are working in the attic or in a corner of the farm? Yeah, you can do that now with a dashboard and follow everything is working. The downside of not feeding a day or half a day or in a weekend or whatever will have a huge impact on the production results.
True.
So using this technology and giving a simple overview of this, I see creates a lot of value. And you don't need to be a tech farmer. You know, we are selling to the world as an ag tech company now with our developments, and this is our job to make it simple, so it can be used for the farmers and the workers.
Sure. I just want to add in here quickly for those who are listening who might actually be a numbers type of person. We have one of our clients, good friends who have done a number of larger farms. They've run the statistics. Unfortunately, the only way you get these statistics is to create or not create, but track the events, the out of feed events. And in a loose housing gestation system, they estimate with data to back it up that a 4-hour out of feed event will create a 4 to 5% drop in a farrowing rate on any animals that it impacts. So anybody who's listening can run the math for themselves. That's a huge number. A 4 to 4 hour out of feed event seems like nothing, but it could mean 5% on your farrowing rate. So these things are extremely important.
Yeah,
I find it interesting too, because just as a perception here, I think all of us would say, okay, China's that market where they got nothing but labor, right? They're going to throw more cheap labor at any kind of a problem. Whereas I'm sure in Europe and definitely here in North America, we struggle with finding labor for barns. It's one of the bigger challenges. Yet even over in Asia, Michael's just saying, well, the technology is helping with the fact that labor is still the challenge, still the bottleneck of, can you make sure that these guys are doing the job they're supposed to do, even if you can get them, right? So it's interesting how you say you find guys even that can say, hey, I don't care how many labors I can throw at it. Technology still trumps it if implemented properly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then in a weaner or a finisher stable, if you have a dropout of feed, this is what we see from our auto pick. You know, it's stunning that they will never, if they stop gaining weight, a period, they will never gain it later. Even the feed comes back and you're trying to give some extra good or whatever. It's you'll never gain what is lost in this. So it is highly important area.
Sure.
And another thing where there's a high focus, and the reason why we also are focusing on this, this is at least there's a lot of focus on sustainability, and even the farmers have to relate to that from the consumers. And giving the right feed to the right animals at the right weight, and not just feeding on a stomach feeling. This is all after our classic feed curves on days and so on. Feeding on based on weight has a huge impact, not only on the environment, but also on your wallet as a farmer. This is definitely an important area to keep focus on.
Well, that's that would seem like a good transition for you to tell us about that equipment that you've developed to track the weight and give us information. I think it would be a good thing for guys to actually learn about. So go ahead, have at it.
Yeah, I tried to sneak it in and you caught it.
So, I caught it. And I want to hear more about the auto pigs.
So
we're not trying to be subtle here, Michael. We're still marketing. I mean, it's interesting. We love talking about it. We love moving the industry forward. But yeah, we still do market stuff. So yes, we like to hear about the new products that we can offer to our customers, and we'll promote them.
Yeah, great. No, and we have this product, or not only a product, we see it more as a solution, which we call AutoPick, and it is a very simple set. It's a scale. It's a weight putting into the pen, but we have seen that in the market before on classic simple controllers, but we have taken this to the next step, and we have combined it with some extra information like registering activity measuring, having the possibility of adding water temperature, combining it with a feed system. Even it's not our feed system, we have something called AutoDust that we can connect to it, so we also can register the feed divided. So there's a lot of possibilities of this, but the basic version is activity and weight. And this is a simple plug and play solution, which you can follow the gain of weight every day. We have created an app and still are developing on it. You know, so you get just in your hand all this information about how the growths are, what is happening, are they growing correctly? We on the activity we can predict change of their health before things actually we can see it with the eyes. We can detect it in their activity level. And a lot of things we have done here, and you know, farmers, they like to and they are driven by the profit at the end of the day. They need to earn a living, and this is also a big part of this, and they like to see the growth. We are doing this system with the batches. We are not completely done, but we like to introduce the pig coin. So that they can see, you know, what do I earn on this batch of pigs. So this is one of the things that we have integrated in the AutoPick.
And the nice thing about the AutoPick is it really doesn't require a lot of direct engagement. You can, once it's set up in within a pen, you don't have to do anything, just let the pigs play with it. No. Let the pigs go. Yeah. And it doesn't require training, doesn't require any kind of special interaction with the pen. It's just put it in, and it's really just a data collector on steroids. I like that. Yeah. Kevin used in the email discussion that earlier, referencing other stuff.
We've seen this concept before, as Michael said. It's not necessarily a brand new idea. Mm-hmm. so much as it has to be done right. You've alluded to that several times, Michael. You can do this job, but it's got to be presented in such a way, and it's got to be simple enough that it actually is useful at the end, yeah. Right? So exactly. So doing this and then presenting it in that way, that's kind of what I see out of your platform, is its interface is kind of what's changing it more than the data collection. There's a lot of companies that can do that, but then you're spending days analyzing the data on your own to figure out where do I get the value out of this info, yeah. Right?
Yeah, data is useless if you can't digest it. If there's too much, if you can't make decisions based on the data, it's not that good to you.
No, and definitely, and you know, having the possibility of benchmarking to earlier batches or other farmers or a standard curve or growth curve or whatever is just encouraging. You know, most of us like a good competition, or if not a competition, then at least like to see that you're succeeding with what you're doing, and this is just in your hand and showing it straight away. And you're right about just putting it into the pen and using the natural behavior of the pigs. It doesn't need training or anything. This is just, yeah.
Pigs are going
into it. Guys are what's the most commonplace use? Where are they putting one, maybe two in a barn to do some tests and learn a few things? Or are they actually putting them throughout and using them as a health monitor? You know, I've got guys, you know, using a similar product, and I'm certainly interested in looking at yours further as well. But the mentality seems to be, okay, I'll put it in, do a few trials, and then that's it. And I'm going, there's way more available to this thing. You put it in and watch it long term. Every single batch, you're going to learn something. Or for three batches, you saw nothing, but then you saw a problem, identified it, and dealt with it before it became a big problem. The thing pays for itself over and over again, right?
Yeah. No, and this has been a big part of our development also, to not bringing a lot of unimportant alarms, but only, you know, providing, giving a heads up on where it creates value, instead of just giving too much. If it's just too much information, it's a too big an effort to getting it. It's out of relevance.
So we
see that same thing, and then you're a NEDAB dealer as well, so you're familiar with that type of mentality, like the managed by exception, where I might have 1,000 cells on the system, but I don't care about the 990 are doing what they're supposed to. I care about the 10 where there's something wrong or different about them, right?
Exactly.
And that's where you get the value of it. Show me what's going wrong, what I can correct. Don't tell me everything's going good. I'll assume it is until you tell me otherwise, right?
So you've run the numbers, I'm assuming, with some farmers. What is likely the biggest financial benefit as a tool of data collection to make management decisions, or as a health monitor to make different types of management decisions? So would it be more on making feed decisions or health decisions? Where would you see the most financial advantage? Or is it somewhat equal? Like, or does one stand out?
I think it's a combination, actually, a nice combination of those two, because you know, the biggest cost for all farmers are the feed. So it has such a huge impact on the bottom line, and then you can even give yourself a diploma and saying, if you change feed on the right time, you're also environmental friendly. So there's a lot of good points in doing that, and we are in the earlier stage of this pre-warnings on the activity, but we see it on the water consumption, and we see it on the activity measuring, where we can detect these health issues coming up, diarrhea or whatever. So here and now, the biggest benefit, I would say, is the feed. But being able to attack an issue earlier is definitely one big thing also for the future. Absolutely.
What is the standard recommendation for pen size, or is there one? How big of a pen would a auto pig unit be useful in?
We have seen we have them running in classic pens with 20-25 pigs in, and we have seen them with double. We are now pushing the limits some places and trying to do bigger pens. We also are using weight sorting systems where we are going up to see 400-500, but for the auto pig it's not the same limit as a sow feed station, for example, where they need time to eat. This is just passing through. Mm-hmm. So for a sorting scale, classic, where they have to be divided into different feed areas, you also have to have a certain maximum flow on it. But we see actually the auto pig wiener and for finishers also as a new concept, because perhaps it's not the right size that the pens are 400, 500, 600, how big you're doing these classic sorting pens. We're actually seeing that perhaps it's somewhere in between a classic small pen and then a pen with 100, 200 pigs instead.
Sure.
It gives an easier overview. You can get a spray marking on the pigs when they're ready for delivery, or with a health issue or whatever. So perhaps they are not served in a delivery area, but giving them a spray marking on the slow growers on ready for delivery, it takes a little more work. Yes, but you don't need to weigh them. You don't need to have that part. So it's you know, I don't know what is your experience with these big groups? Are they having the same growth as in classic pens?
General feedback I get is there isn't necessarily better growth in the larger pens. I think that's where we're maybe balancing back to is the classic, as you say, the small 25, 30, whatever. That's not the right way, but 500-600 is not necessarily perfect either, right? Somewhere back in between the 100-300 range. And then with something like the auto pig as a tool, in my experience with something similar to that, because you say it's non-restrictive, like a sow feeder would be where we have to give them time, like an auto sort finisher where we got to give them time. There's a process. We got to manage the flow and factor of time in the day. This is just a free flow access thing. It's more like a poultry scale with anybody who's familiar with that, right? They can jump on and off as they want. And the more pigs you have that have access to it, the more data points you're going to get. That's all it is. It's not actually a restrictive thing. So more is better, which obviously, one in a pen of 600, there's probably pigs that never go on it. That's the reality. You're getting to a size where you're still monitoring a good portion of the pen, but not necessarily all of them, right? That's been what I've seen.
And we wouldn't see, anyway, without an auto sort scale, you typically wouldn't see a pen of that size. I would say it's more common to see 50 to 150 of various layouts and designs is going to be a non-sorting, non-scaling pen. 25 is likely a bit small at this point for a lot of guys, but 100 is probably a much better estimation for a standard pen size, which I think that would make that the auto pig a very good fit for guys to drop it in that pen and really be an activity monitor. And I see that with the coming development, correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm reading it wrong, I see that with continued development in understanding the activity of these animals, the health understanding that could come from the activity monitoring could be as much of a component as the feed scheduling or feed targeting. So it could be a twofold benefit that I believe that there could be a significant advantage to having both of those there.
No, I agree.
So So what else is coming up new? What's in the pipeline, or is there stuff that's still proprietary that you that you're going to be careful about?
Yeah, always.
Oh, I know. I asked that knowing that there's stuff that I'll never even hear about.
One of the things we also see a huge interest in, and that's perhaps a little premature for some of your areas, I don't know, but at least this is a demand also coming from the consumers. This is the welfare focus. And we have these systems adding bedding material in the pens, and this is mandatory actually by law in Europe, and it has been in Denmark, Norway, and Sweden for several years, and now it's going more out into the rest of Europe. And this is one of the areas where we also get a request a lot. But then the multi-phase feeding in general, I don't know how common that is, but this is for you guys, but for us, this is absolutely standard. We saw entering Spain, as I mentioned, this year with our own office and staff there. They haven't been using multi-phase feeding so much, and even the equipment suppliers there are not so common. When one of the news on the latest Figan fair in Spain was one of the big players there, they introduced and got even an award for a two-phase feeding system, being able to supply two different feed types, but with a hard shift, not according to a curve. So this is for us very standard, and being able to make a sliding shift of the feed types, so we don't have this hard shift.
Yeah, transient shift rather than a hard shift.
It's
kind of surprising that I again, like Kevin said, we would have, you know, lumped Spain in with the rest and said and assumed that they were at that level of where you guys are with the multi-phase feeding. So it's kind of surprising to hear that they aren't. Quick question about Spain. I mean, I'm geographically, where are the pigs in Spain? Is there a region in Spain that would be pig central, or is it fairly broad across?
Small city called Barcelona. I think some would say that. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you open up in Spain just so you have a place to go for a vacation? That's the other question I have coming.
Very tempting. It's a fantastic country. And there's a lot of fantastic cities there. Yes, there's definitely pig areas. And we are located in Zaragoza. Which is, 300 kilometers from Barcelona. So this is a huge pig area, but there is also a couple of other regions there with high focus and a lot of farmers. There's a lot of integrators, big integrators in Spain, but there's also family farms still. And we are in contact with both levels.
So you're closer. I'm just, of course, what do? I open up my phone and look at the map.
Yeah.
So you're farther. You're more eastern than northeastern, really, in Spain. And is that primarily because that's the agrarian region where you'd have access to feed more readily, or what drives that being the primary region?
Oh, I better not say a lot about that because it would be a bit guessing if I have to be honest.
Sure.
Our Spanish guy, he will enter Denmark here, what is it, Thursday this week? So he will kill me if I say something wrong and tell me I'm embarrassed.
I'll tell you what, why don't you just get a recorder and have a conversation with him in English and send it to us, and we'll use it as a podcast on its own then.
Yeah, I will do that.
That's good though. That you got to learn to admit the things you don't know, right? We can't be experts at all of it. So.
Exactly. Yeah. No. And thank God for that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, what else have we got, Kevin? Anything else you want to bring up or discuss? We've kind of gone over the gamut of.
Off the air, I'm going to, me and Michael are going to stay in conversation. I'm going to bring his auto pig to the North American market. So, but that's an off air conversation.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We're not going to be like, what does it cost us, Michael? Edit that one out. Yeah.
Like you said, we've had a similar product in our product line here for several years. And it is one of those that I find time and time again, even with what the one we currently have does, yeah, once guys have it, they're just amazed. Why didn't I have this thing sooner? Kind of a thing. And as we said, yeah, yours kind of seems to be this on steroids. So I think there's actually the stuff that we've already learned. You've alluded to a lot of that, Michael. It doesn't take much to learn a bit in the nursery and go, hey, I just paid for this unit, but I still have it and I'm still learning each round. Even if you're not changing and tweaking your feed curve every time, because you're like, well, you should eventually get to a point where you don't have to, obviously. But the health part of it, where I've got feedback from guys going remotely, they figured out that someone had, you know, mistakes happen. Someone had manually turned the wrong ball valve and the water was off to the roof. They noticed that because of the machine and were able to address that within an hour or two. Well, it would have been probably 2 days before somebody actually physically noticed. And by then, exactly. Those pigs are, you've cost yourself so much in one change feed in the bin and notice that they're going off feed. We've seen that even in the sows, Tim. You get, and if guys are actually on top of it, hey, they all stopped eating at once. What's going on? The quicker you address this, the less damage you've done to your entire system, right? So
and yet I
see a lot of value in that kind of info.
And yet you learn, and the fun part about these types of or pieces of equipment with this type of approach, you learn where the mistakes can be made. You learn what could happen. You were able to deal with bad issues much quicker, and yet the best thing in the world is when you can learn from it and stop making those mistakes, and you have a validating tool rather than a correcting tool, and that's the thing, is that you're willing to have put that money out to validate that you're actually not making mistakes. That's better than making a mistake. And that's actually more profitable than fixing a potential problem. Of course, saving money from something that went wrong is absolutely necessary and will pay for itself. But you make more money if you don't make the mistake in the first place.
100%. Learn to prevent them.
Yeah. So you can actually learn to be better at reducing the amount of times you have to correct things. And then it becomes a tool of validation, not just a tool of correction.
Exactly. And what you both are saying is exactly one of the benefits of also not only the auto pig, but also the IoT part of it. One of the systems, one of the first farms we did with IoT controllers on the silos on a satellite farm for a customer, also showed that, you know, no one reacted on an empty silo over the weekend. No. And if this wasn't detected and shown via the controller to the farmer, then he wouldn't know. He would just have a bad result on that batch. Yep. Mm-hmm. So who's taking care of this? It's not to point fingers or leave anyone hanging there, but it's just to get good routines and correct mistakes.
Sure. Yeah, one of our other good friends, Chet Mogler's, taught us some of that with how they track it. Is they found that in the aggregate, yes, you can, correct a mistake here or correct a mistake there. But in the bigger picture, what you want to do is reduce the amount of mistakes that happen in the first place. And making this information visible usually helps reduce the overall amount of problems that arise, whether it's mistakes or things that go wrong, things that could have been prevented or things that should have been prevented. When it becomes visible, it becomes less, because then people can actually learn and grow from it.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Clever words.
Uh, All right. Well, we're probably running close to enough time here already that we've taken from Michael, and we really appreciate it. Kevin, was there anything else specifically, or did you get your questions all?
No, it's been great talking to you again, Michael, and I actually look forward to a time where, yeah, we can actually sit down and have a glass of wine again together. Hopefully not too far in the future. So.
Yeah. Perhaps something will open up.
Sooner than we think. Let's hope that.
Yeah. We really do appreciate the time you've spent today, Michael. We know you're busy. It's no different for you than anybody else. So we do appreciate what you've done here and helped us out with this podcast. Obviously, we're excited about some of the information. We just love having a chance to chat with you as well, because that doesn't happen as often as we'd like. So I guess with that, we'll probably wrap it up for all those listening. Look for some information coming out about the AutoPig. Sounds like we're going to try and push on that fairly hard, Kevin, if I'm not mistaken, or at least bring the information out. So I guess with that, we'll wrap it up. Michael, again, we appreciate very much. You go and get yourself a glass of wine now.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Yep. Take care.
It's been a pleasure. Great.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, guys. Another successful and fun podcast is wrapped up and done. I hope you enjoyed it. I just want to encourage you guys to follow up. Anybody who is in the, especially in the hog world, this AutoPig thing that we're going to be bringing out, we'll certainly talk to Michael, bring some information out. I've looked at it. I know it relates to or is similar to other products that have been used in Western Canada more than in the U.S., but I do believe it's going to be a good add-on and probably a very useful tool for a lot of guys. So we encourage you to look for that. As far as everything else goes, we just appreciate you listening. If you don't follow us already on some of our social media, I'd encourage you to do that, whether it's YouTube or Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever is your media of choice. Look for us. We're not that hard to find. You don't need us to hand feed you the links. You're all more than capable. Just wanted to say I appreciate you guys listening, and have a good day.